So earlier this week, so I was up before everyone else was awake, and I got in the shower, and I don't know about you, do some of you have like 17 bottles of shampoo lined up on the ledge there, or are we the only ones? Okay, well, we have a lot of kids. So anyway, there was a whole line of shampoo bottles here. So there I am in the shower. I'm a little sleepy, a little groggy, and my elbow just knocks one of the shampoo bottles. And all of a sudden, it's like, starts going down, and then knocks the next one. And before I know, I see all these starting to tumble down. You've got to realize that if the kids wake up before they're supposed to, they don't just go back to sleep. They're up, and then they start making a racket, and then they wake up the other kids, and it's a disaster in the Lewis household. And so there I am in the morning trying to hold them, and so they start coming down, and I'm like, and then I find myself in the shower early in the morning like this. I'm like this, trying to hold everything up, trying to push it back up so that it doesn't fall. Now, it made me think as I was in this position. Do any of you feel like you're like this sometimes? Not with the shampoo bottles, but just in life, where you're literally trying to hold everything up, and one wrong move makes everything start to tumble down before, and then it makes a big mess in your life. Well, that's what's happening in the book of Ruth that we're going to be looking at. Ruth is a story of disaster, of tragedy happening. And it's like, well, what do you do when tragedy comes? Whereas we begin to work our way through Ruth, we're going to see some ways that different people responded to tragedy. And hopefully then we can learn from these people what to do and what not to do. And I hope that by the end of this, you'll be challenged not only to just hold fast during tragedy, but that you'll be challenged to hold fast to Christ during tragedy. So let's go ahead and look at Adam, you got me going here. I almost said Luke chapter 1 as well. We're going to look at Ruth chapter 1, and the first five verses here are what I call, in this part of the chapter, bad decisions. Bad decisions. Let me read the first verse. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. Just like many stories, this is setting the scene so that we know what in the world's going on here. So Ruth is the book that's right after the book of Judges. And this is also now taking place. Ruth is taking place during the time of the judges. If you're familiar with the Old Testament, the time of the judges was not a happy, peaceful time. In fact, in Judges 21:25, if you have your Bibles open, it's literally the verse before Ruth. It says, in those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, does that sound like a recipe for a good, peaceful time? No. And so during the time of Judges, there was this time, it was this time of chaos. It was this time when people would do whatever they wanted to do, that they would reject God. And when they did that, God would eventually let them go and do what they wanted to do. And then eventually the people would be like, hey, we're better off with God. And so then they'd call out to God, ask him for help, and God would save them. God would send someone to rescue them. God would heal the land. And then once he saved them, they'd begin to drift off again and fall back into sin. It was this cycle over and over and over again through the book of Judges. And this is what's going on during the time of Ruth. We don't know if it's a peaceful time or not peaceful time, but this is the chaos that's going on in Ruth. Now, we also see in this first verse that there is a famine going on. There's a famine. Now, is the famine because God is judging them and because of their sins? We don't know. We don't know why the famine is there, but we know that a famine is happening, and famines in that time were never a good thing. You see, here, if we had some sort of famine, what could we do? We could open up our canned goods and just begin eating from those. You know, we have our stockpile of baked beans here at our house, all the essentials, right? Or we could go down to Market Basket and get all the food we want. There's McDonald's down the street. There's the Five Guys. You know, there's all these different places that even if there's a famine here, they could ship in the food from everywhere else, and so we're fine. But it was not like that during the time of the judges. It was not. And so when there was a famine, if they were not able to make food in that area, they did not eat. And so they were in deep doo-doo. They were in big trouble. It was not a good time to be around. And all these stresses lead one family to take extreme measures. Let's look at the next part of the verse. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the name of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. And I know there's a lot of names, a lot of things going on. You're like, what? Let me explain the most important part for this purpose here. Since there was a famine, the family, the husband, moved them away from Bethlehem and moved them into Moab. Now, when we move in our day and age, we don't think much of it, do we? Our family moved from Maryland to New Hampshire a year and a half ago, and it was no problem. You just put everything in the U-Haul, or you have the youth group put everything in the U-Haul, and then they move it on. Actually, I take that back. You have Kale drive everything up. And then you have the church put everything in our new house. It was actually pretty easy for me. But in that time, moving was much different. Not just in terms of the logistics of moving, but you just didn't move from Bethlehem to Moab. Moab was not the premier destination in that time. Think about this. Moab came to be as a country because of an incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughter. If you remember, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot lost his wife. He gets drunk. The two daughters are like, how are we going to have kids? And so they sleep with their dad. And then one of the daughters has a kid, and that kid's name is Moab. And so he went on to become the nation of Moab. So the Moabites, though, were not friends with the Israelites. If you look through, the first five books of the Old Testament, you'd see there's a couple different times when Israel would come up to Moab, and it never went well. One time, Israel was going through the desert, and they wanted to pass through the land of Moab, and the Moabites said, not coming in here. Hey, we're like long-distance relatives. Come on, let us in here. Nope, not coming in. And then later on, we read that that the women of Moab tempted the men of Israel and led them away into immorality. And God actually judged the nation of Israel, 20,000-something people dying, because of the women of Moab tempting the men of Israel. Now keep that in mind as we go through the story here and think about the main character in this book is a Moabite woman, Ruth, Moabite woman. So these are not good countries. These are not people that they're on good terms with. But also Moab was a pagan nation. They did not follow the true God. In fact, they followed a false god named Chilion, where people of that time would make child sacrifices to them. And there was prostitution and all sorts of other immorality involved in worshiping that false god. This is not the nation that you want to take your family to. And yet that is what Elimelech did. Let's look at verse 3. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. And these took Moabite wives. And the name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. All right, so now the story begins to shift from just the family or really the husband to Naomi here, the mother or the mother-in-law. And we see that not only does the husband die, But then after the two sons marry the Moabite women, the two sons die as well. Before we go any further, though, I want to point out that in Deuteronomy chapter 7, you can just write this down and look at it later, Deuteronomy 7, 3 and 4, it makes it clear that they were not, that Israel was not to intermarry with foreign women. And what did the two sons do? They married foreign women here. Now, it's not that they were foreign was the problem. The problem is that they worshiped other gods. And God put that command in there because he knew that if they went and married women, and it's and the command is same for the not to marry men as well, that are foreign men. And so they knew that if you marry these people that have that serve and worship other gods, it would mess up your relationship with the true God. We don't know what happened, but we know that then the two sons died. So we're at the end of verse 5 now. And I just want to point out a couple of poor decisions that have happened along the way now. There's this trail of poor decisions. You know, Elimelech takes his family away from the promised land. They are in the promised land. Now, there's a famine going on, but we don't hear about a lot of other people moving. They are in the place where God dwells. They're in the place where their family is. They're in the place where their community is. And he takes all of them away from this. Not only that, we see also that the two sons marry foreign women that God had expressly said not to marry. And because of all of this, I believe that we see all these deaths happening, all these people suffering because of their bad decisions. And here's the first point, that your decisions impact your life. Your decisions impact your life. Now, I don't want to say from the beginning, I don't want to say that everything bad that happens in your life is because of something that you've done. You know, something bad happens. Oh, I must have sinned. Not necessarily. But I do want to say that bad decisions do bring tragedy into your life. So do you get what I'm saying here? Not everything bad is because of something you've done, but bad things you do bring on tragedy. Now, husbands, let me speak to you for a minute here. Elimelech made very bad decisions for his family, and that ended up costing him his life and costing him his children's lives. Now, husbands, here, God has called you to be the leader of your household. God has called you to be the spiritual leader. So are the decisions that you are making right now, are they benefiting your family spiritually, or are they bringing them down spiritually? And I'm not just talking financially. Many of us here, you know, we try to be good at the financial part, but we miss out on everything else. Elimelech was essentially making a financial decision in the sense of he was wanting to physically provide for his family, but he missed out on the spiritual side of things. He took them into a foreign nation where they worshiped other gods, and he took them into a place that is away from his church, away from worshiping God, away from the community, all these things. And at what expense? They had food, but they probably suffered spiritually. And because of this decision, his children ended up marrying pagan women, which God says was forbidden. They missed all these things. And so, husbands, I want to challenge you. Instead of simply being the financial provider, I want to challenge you to be the spiritual provider as well. Now, if you have a spiritually mature wife who's maybe even beyond what you think you are, then praise God for that and celebrate that. But God is saying, you, husbands, you, step up and lead your family well. Lead your family. Are you making decisions that is benefiting them or bringing them down? That decision that you make, that sin that you pursue, that doesn't just impact you, it impacts your family. So I want to challenge you, husbands. Step it up. Step it up and be the spiritual leader that God has called you to be. Young men and women, let me talk to you for a minute. Your decisions matter. Who you pursue, who you date, who you marry matters. What you do in your life matters. You know, we live in a time where you're called that you can just do whatever you want. Just live a little. Just have fun. You know, every time you go out there, I want you to remember that your decisions will impact your life. The good decisions you make will impact your life, and the bad decisions you make will impact your life. These two sons married foreign women, and I can't help but think that they died because they disobeyed God. It's just my opinion, but I believe that they died because they did not listen to God. Look at Deuteronomy 7, 3 and 4. You can read that and see that God would judge the people who did that in the Old Testament. So young people, your decisions matter. And as I've said, you know, tragedy happens for a lot of reasons. So just because you make a mistake does not mean that all the bad things that happen are because of that. But be careful with your decisions. So we're out of now these first five verses. I want to go on to the center portion of our passage here. This is verses 6 through 21. The poor decisions have been made. The tragedy has come. Now we have dealing with tragedy. And we're going to see here three ways, in a little bit, that people deal with tragedy in this passage here. In verse 6, it says, "Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. And so she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah." So Naomi hears that there's food out in Bethlehem. She's in Moab, but she hears that there's food out there, and she has nothing left in Moab. She's broken. She's tired. And she says, "Well, I might as well return home." And so she starts out traveling now back home. It makes me think, though. Think about this. Naomi, when she hears there's food, she goes back to Bethlehem. Do you think if the two sons had really wanted to go back to find wives, they could have traveled back? It was 30 to 50 miles. We're not talking, you know, across the ocean here. They could have gone back, but they didn't. Just a little side note there. Verse 8, "But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband.' And then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, 'No, we will return with you to your people.'" So she's walking back to Bethlehem. She has her two daughters-in-law. And she says, "Why are you coming back with me? Go home. Go home. You'll have better luck there." And so far, at least, Orpah and Ruth, "No, we're staying with you. We're staying with you." But then Naomi gives another reason in verse 11. "But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that I may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say, I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter for me, for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me.'" So Naomi brings up another reason. What she's referring to is this Jewish law that if a husband dies and has no sons, then the husband, or then the widowed, you know, the woman, would then be married off to one of the dead husband's brothers. Because women at that time had very little rights, very little ways of protecting themselves. And so that law was put into place in order to protect the women. But can you imagine if that law was in place now? You'd be paying a lot closer attention to who your brothers marry, right? But Naomi's saying that even with this law, even if someone provided a husband for me tonight, there's no way I could go and make babies and then marry them off to you two. It's like, there's nothing I can do for you, she's saying. Why come with me? There's nothing I can do. But then she points out at the end of that passage, not only is there nothing I can do for you, but she says, the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Don't stay with me. I am dangerous. It's like you're the lucky person, unlucky person with the cloud following you around. It's just raining. And it's like, get away from me. That's what Naomi's saying there. And you know what? It convinces one of them. Orpah, in verse 14, we see that they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And so Orpah, at that point, Orpah is gone. Have you ever felt like that? Where it feels like everything is against you? Or it feels like everything, even the hand of God is against you? That's what Naomi's feeling right there. Well, we see now the first, what I call the first group of what people do when tragedy strikes in their life. And this is from what Orpah does. Orpah returns home. And so when tragedy strikes, they flee from God. They flee from God. You see, in leaving Naomi, Orpah was leaving God as well. Orpah was not returning to a place that worshiped God. She was returning back to her home, back to her people, and back to her false gods. And so when tragedy struck, she fled from God. We've all seen these types of people, haven't we? Where something bad happens, something really bad happens, and they get really angry at God. And because of that, they just walk away from God. And they're angry, bitter at God, and want nothing to do with God, nothing to do with the church. That's what people do. That's what Orpah essentially did. This is a natural response. When we think that God has done this against us, you know, it would be a natural response. But I want to challenge you to think about this. This is the opposite of what we need. When something bad happens, we need God during our tragedy. We need God during the tough times. So the worst thing that we can do for ourselves is to walk away from God. I wonder about Orpah. I wonder what happened the rest of her life. We don't know. But I'm willing to bet it was not one that ended up following God. Let's look at verse 15. So Naomi said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." So Naomi's gotten rid of one of them. Now she's working on Ruth as well. She's telling, Orpah's gone. Now Ruth, go back to your family. Now Naomi probably thinks at this point that she's doing Ruth a favor here. She thinks she has nothing to offer. She thinks she's just sort of a walking disaster. And she feels that there's no hope. And she's saying, you're better off without me. And this is what I think is the second group of people, that when tragedy strikes, they isolate themselves. They isolate themselves. Naomi is saying, get away. Let me just wallow in my own misery. Let me just do what I need to do. Let me just be on my own. Yet little does she know that the person next to her is her way to salvation, to physical salvation. You know, and some of us are going to do that same thing as well, that when tragedy strikes, we just want to be on our own. We just want to do our own thing. We just want to sit in our own misery alone. But spiritual growth rarely happens in isolation. It rarely happens in isolation. And so what usually happens is the group twoers also end up becoming the group oneers. You follow me there? Not only do they isolate themselves from people, but eventually then they isolate themselves from God. And as I said with the first group, the worst thing that you can do for yourself is abandon God in the midst of tragedy. So it's not good. In church, one of the blessings of our faith is that we are a body. Is that we're a body. And as a body, we help each other. And when people get sick, we do what we can as a church to help them. We're not perfect. We're not big. We don't have a ton of resources, but we try. When people go through suffering, we try to support each other. And as we're going to see, Ruth was a big support to Naomi. But at that point, Naomi wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. Let's go now look at group three here, verse 16. But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go. For where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God." And that's key right there. "Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me. And more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So Naomi tries to push Ruth away, but Ruth's saying, I am sticking with you. I'm sticking with you. I am not going anywhere. But let's not miss the second part. Not only is she sticking with Naomi, but she says, "Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." So Naomi was headed back to Bethlehem. Her God was the true God of Abraham and Isaac, God of the Israelites. And she was declaring that she was going back, that she was sticking with Yahweh. So this is our third group of people that when tragedy strikes, they run to God and his people. They run to God and his people. And let me tell you that when we encounter tragedy in our life, that this is what we need to do when this happens. That God is the source of salvation and that he is the one that we need most when we run into trouble. Proverbs 18:10 says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous man runs into it and is safe." And safe. James 1:22, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial." In other words, who remains steadfast with God under trial. "For when he has stood the test, will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him." And church, this is the key to the spiritual life. This is the key that we need to hold on to, not just in tragedy, but outside of tragedy as well. You see, salvation comes through believing and receiving Jesus Christ. And so salvation in this sense is very easy for us to attain. We simply turn to God and make him the Lord of our life. But that does not mean that at that point we just sit back and do nothing. Once we're a Christian, our number one job is to stick close to God, is to stick close to him and stay as close as we can to him, because he is the strong tower. In him, we are safe. Sometimes I think of my young kids. My two young kids are really good at this part, sticking close. They know in the morning times, I take them to school, and they know that I am the source of provision and authority. And so if they ever need anything, they come to me. If something happens in their life, they come to me. In fact, I cannot go more than 10 seconds without someone coming to me and telling me something in the morning. I give them their food, and I sneak up to the bathroom. I turn around, and he's there. There I am in the shower, trying to shower. And there the curtain opens, and they're there. I tell you the truth here. I'm driving my older daughter to school. It's a five-minute drive, and I have the three in the car. In the 5 minutes, I counted my name being called 50 times. 50 times. Dada, 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 dada. drove me crazy, but let me tell you, it doesn't drive God crazy. Doesn't drive God crazy. Yeah, I didn't say that. Some of my kids are here. I love you kids. But stick close to God. Stick close to him. When you have tragedy, stick close to him. When things are going well, stick close to him. Stick close to God because he is your source of provision. He is the one that you need. Let's go on now to verse 19. We'll see that this is what Ruth did. And so now they walk in to Bethlehem. So verse 19. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" And so they reach Bethlehem and everyone's all excited, all stirred up to see. We have Naomi. She left 10 plus years prior with a family full of life. And she returns with no one but a Moabite daughter-in-law. No one else. And she returned happy, or she left happy, she returned bitter. The name Naomi literally means pleasant or lovely. And she's saying, "No, that is not my name anymore. My name is Mara," which literally means bitter. Bitter. She's returned a bitter, hopeless person. But even worse, she's a bitter, hopeless person against God. She says, "The Lord testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me." Can you hear that bitterness in her voice against God? You know, she doesn't sound too big on her daughter-in-law either. She says, "I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." I can imagine Naomi standing there thinking, "What about me? I've just declared these beautiful words that where you go, I go." And yet, Naomi's saying, "I've come back empty." Now, at this point, Naomi will likely not win Mother-in-Law of the Year award. Not going to win that award. But I want to point out three things as we start to wrap this up that she did do well. And that benefited her towards healing. As she comes out of tragedy. First of all, she allowed someone to help her. She allowed, reluctantly, but she allowed someone to help her. She doesn't seem too big on Ruth at this point. That'll change. But right now, not too big on her, but she reluctantly allowed Ruth to come with her. That's a good first step. As I said, isolation's not good. So she let Ruth come with her. And that was a good first step. And as we'll see in the future chapters, it's going to be a big, big help to her. But second, she was honest. She was honest. She had been dealt a severe blow. She had gone through an enormous amount of tragedy. But at least she's not stuffing it. At least she's not pretending otherwise. At least she's not denying it. She's honest. And again, that's a good step forward. Sometimes churches get a bad rap because, you know, someone will be in the car cranky, had a horrible week, as they're driving in, the moment they walk through the door, "How you doing? God bless you. Good to see you." And I wonder if we just had a little bit more honesty with each other, how we might be able to help each other. You come in cranky. All right, well, don't be cranky at me, but be cranky at some of your other people here. But be honest. Be honest and let others help you. But third, she came back. She came back. It was a bad decision to leave Bethlehem. She messed up, but at least she came back. You might be going through tragedy as well right now. You might be angry at God. You might have rejected God or feel rejected by him. But I want to challenge you that wherever, whatever you're feeling right now, to do what Naomi did and come back. Come back. Come back to God. Come back to community. Come back home. There's only one verse left now, and I want to read this last one, which gives us a glimmer of hope. Ruth is four chapters, and so we have the depressing part here in the first chapter. I can promise you it gets better from here in sense of optimism, but there is a glimmer of hope as they walk into Bethlehem. It says in verse 22, "So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite," it's like the author's pointing out Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, "with her, who returned from the country of Moab." Yes, yes, we know. "And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest." Those last words there are key. They didn't plan it this way. They didn't know this was happening. But they return right at the beginning of barley harvest. And it is through this little fact that they have no idea about that will set some things into motion that will dramatically change their lives. They don't know about it right now. So they don't have a glimmer of hope right now. But you know what? God is working even when they don't know it. And I want to say to you all as well, you may be going through tragedy. You may feel like God has abandoned you, but God is at work. He is working. He is moving. You may not see it, but he will not abandon you. So again, I want to call to each of you, come back home. And so if you've never turned or put your faith in Jesus Christ, come to him. Come back to him. Or maybe you've drifted away. Come back to Jesus Christ. This story that we've looked at, really as a whole, it gives us a picture of the gospel message. You can see all of us at one time were far from God. We were in the land of Moab. And yet, Jesus Christ, thanks to what he's done on the cross, now provides a way for us to come back home to him. It simply begins with calling out to him, saying, "God, I want you to be the Lord of my life." The scriptures say that when you believe in him and receive him into your life, that you are saved. So if you've never done that before, I want to challenge you as we go into a time of communion and then of singing, come back to him. Let's pray.